Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way. Presented by Cass Media and Soul Pancake.
Hey there, I'm Rainn Wilson.
And I'm Reza Aslan, and I'm trying to be a better man.
Doesn't that mean you're just trying to be a better person?
No, I mean literally, I'm trying to be a better man. Like man.
Like a man-man.
Like a man-man. I mean, I'm not saying I know what that actually means.
Well, let's find out. Let's ask a woman.
Perfect. So, Rainn, of the many, many things that we have in common with each other, one of them is that we are both fathers to boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Raising boys.
Four boys between us.
Yeah. One for me, three for you. Do you want to give me one of yours and we'll just split it?
I might think about it. I got twins. I mean, they're kind of interchangeable. You can have one of them.
Don't they hit on each other a lot too? There's a lot of punching.
A lot of punching in my family.
No,
with
is that
boys.
So? Is that, you know, we're going to talk about toxic masculinity and manhood and stuff like that. Does it bother you all the punching, or is it just natural the punching, or how do you get through?
I gotta be honest,
little kids hitting each other.
You know, it affects my wife more than it affects me. Like Jessica, when Jasper and Cyrus, you know, fight each other, I mean, physically fight each other, Jessica breaks down. Like she just starts weeping. She doesn't know how to respond to it. And I'm like, all right, boys, like go to opposite corners. Cause I guess as a man, I just think, well, sure, you get frustrated and you punch. Isn't that what you do?
You're kind of wired to do that.
And I think for her, it's just so outside of her experience. And so yeah, this is part of this issue about what it means to be a man.
I know my son, his favorite thing to do, and has always been his favorite thing to do, is to wrestle with me. He's 15 now, and he's not close to winning, but it's starting to hurt a little bit more. But he loves to wrestle. He needs the contact and the I don't know what it is, the resistance and something about subverting me. There's a little bit of some elemental Greek stuff there, Saturn overthrowing the father. There's some Oedipal kind of shit going
on.
He loves the fact that he's a better guitar player than me now. He loves to lord it over me. And it's a natural part of manhood, but it can certainly go too far.
Yeah, and for both of us, you know, we like to think of ourselves as worldly and progressive. I know that, you know, with Jasper and Cyrus, my wife and I went out of our way not to give them sort of traditional boys' toys. Mm-hmm. And yet, that's all they wanted. All they wanted was like cars and trucks. And we're like, what is this? Like, we didn't do this.
Right.
We would give them dolls and be like, isn't this a cute doll? You should play with it. And they'd be like, can I beat this doll up? Like, what is this?
Turn it into a gun?
Pew, yeah, pew, pew. Everything gets turned into a weapon. Is that just a boy thing? What are we doing here?
This is tough. So I grew up in a home where my dad was very gentle. And very kind. You know, he has his flaws. We've had our issues. We have our issues. But I didn't get any kind of toxic masculinity stuff kind of thrust on me. And I know that that can be incredibly debilitating to people that have grown up with that. But there were some aspects of his manhood and the manhood that I inherited, both from him and from men around me, men on television, men in our greater family, which were some issues that I still wrestle with today. And that is, as a man, I'm supposed to be self-sufficient.
Yep.
I'm not supposed to need help from anyone.
All right.
I'm not supposed to ask for help. I'm not supposed to make myself vulnerable. I'm
No.
not supposed to show or reveal my emotions, my flaws, my vulnerabilities. And this has been something that my dad doesn't do. He doesn't reveal his vulnerabilities. And it's something that has been an issue with me that I've carried through my life. Do you have issues around that?
I mean, almost identical. I mean, yeah, my dad wasn't by any means sort of a manly man, but yes, he never showed any vulnerability. He tried never to show any kind of emotional weakness.
Other than the occasional flash of anger, I imagine, which is an okay emotion for men to express.
In fact, it's the only emotion that we're allowed to express. And I would say, like, for me, my biggest psychological problem and the thing that I've worked hardest on as a husband is precisely trying to have, you know, more than one emotional reaction to things. I mean, I feel like for me, sadness gets expressed as anger. Confusion gets expressed as anger. Any vulnerability that I have comes out as anger.
Your Twitter feed expresses
itself
I've noticed.
As anger. And I think that's kind of the example that I had when I grew up. I'm sure that's the example that my father had when he grew up. I'm sure that's the example that many men have.
I mean, another aspect of toxic masculinity that does affect me and is, you know, I hate to be all woke and use this language, but it's white male privilege. You know, like, yeah. I am so privileged in every way. I'm rich. I'm a celebrity. I'm white. I'm over 6'2". I'm college educated, whatever. And I can't help sometimes but assume the mantle of like, hey, I should be listened to. I get to interrupt. My opinion counts more. People are going to look to me for the answers. I'm going to be the center of things. There's a kind of a entitlement and arrogance there that kind of comes with the territory that it takes a lot of work to be semi-woke to kind of go like, hey, you know, what can I listen more? Can I be humble more? Can I surrender more and prove my ignorance more and be an ally and supporter of people's voices that are marginalized? I know all that stuff is really cliche, but I find it like this is something I struggle with. And thank God I have a wife who will point it out to me. Like, you just interrupted me.
She points
me.
It out all the time.
You interrupted this person. You didn't listen to me. You went on and on about this thing. And she also points out how other people, and, you know, women too, will kind of give me a megaphone, kind of. They turn to you, Rain. Did you see how everyone was like, I wonder what Rain thinks? And, like, you kind of had the attention of the room and, like, You know, you have to watch for that. There's a lot of ego around that.
So we're trying, you and I, but whether we're succeeding or not is difficult to know. And you said it perfectly. Like, maybe the best way to do this is to talk to a woman about it. And so while you were off on some crazy adventure in Greenland, I had an opportunity to sit down and talk to somebody that I love, somebody that I'd actually never met. Personally, we're like sort of social media friends, but somebody that I've been following for a really long time. Her name is Liz Plank. She's a feminist activist. She's host of Vox Media's Consider It. And she has gotten a lot of attention for a book that she's just written called For the Love of Men, A New Vision of Mindful Masculinity. And in it, she explores precisely what we're talking about right now, how damaging traditional ideas of masculinity have been, not just for men, but for all of us, for all of society. And I had an opportunity to not just sit down and talk to her, but I had a chance to actually bring one of my boys along to join.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
Yeah. And here we go.
A master's in gender theory, and I've been thinking about this stuff for a very long time, but I started realizing that often the rooms that I was in, the progressive feminist spaces, which were amazing and where we would have incredible conversations, there were kind of like half of us missing in those conversations. And the main people who were kind of, really the problem or responsible
we
for a lot
up.
Of the, yes, there seemed to be an imbalance there. And I joke that we would just, you know, always like wave to the guy in the back, and you've probably been that guy in so many of those rooms, and we all go, thank you for being here. Thank you for being an ally. Go talk to men. And clearly that has not worked so far. You know, I started writing this book before the 2016 election. Then Donald Trump was elected. It was even clearer that we really needed to have a conversation around masculinity and around men. And so I started talking to men. Mm. And I started interviewing men and asking them very simple questions about masculinity.
Like what?
Like what's hard about being a man?
What's hard about being a man?
Yeah, tell me what's hard about being a man.
What's hard about being a woke man? That's
any
different.
Kind of, I mean, tell me more. What's
the I would say that the most difficult part for me about understanding my malehood and my masculinity is balancing the expectations. Not that society has on me, fuck society, but the expectations that that I have on myself.
Mm.
And especially as a husband and as a father and as a son, with my desire to kind of brush off those expectations and to sort of try to get away from the binary itself altogether. You know, like I would say that's for me the hardest thing about being a man.
And what is the main way for you to express yourself as a man? Like, what does a man mean to you?
It's what almost every man you've asked this question to says about creating protection.
Yeah.
Right. And prosperity. Like, I feel like those are the two burdens that fall on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Protection and prosperity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do. Right. The protector, provider ideal, which is, you know, pretty much every society falls on the shoulders of men. And one of the things that fascinated me was how angry I was at my own scholarship and my own education, having been incredibly privileged to be able to earn a master's degree in gender theory already, to see how little I had been taught about masculinity and how little, you know, I hadn't been assigned a single book about masculinity. And what you're talking about in terms of the provider-protector model is actually increasingly correlated with increasing amounts of suicide amongst men, right? Mm-hmm. So in societies where more women work, for example, where there's more gender equality, it actually protects men from suicide attempts and dying from suicide during times of economic hardships. So you really see during times of recession, 2008 recession or across Europe, we really saw an increase in male suicides. And feminism, right? Gender equality, female empowerment can be an antidote to these increasing levels of male suicide, because women are sharing those responsibilities too. And then we're all providers and we're all protectors.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I'm going to provide in a more financial way, and you're going to provide by being there and making sure our kids don't die.
Yeah.
those are obviously equally important, right? The person who pays for the book is just as important as a person who teaches the kid how to read that book. And actually just buying the book without having someone being able to teach it is useless. And so we have to expand these definitions of how we all are providers and protectors so that you're able to still be a man and not have to prove your masculinity if you're not able to achieve those expectations that are truly ideals that aren't always possible for all men to achieve.
But to this point of the notion of expectation. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I had to stop and think to myself, you know, are the expectations that I have of myself as a man, are they forced upon me by others? And the truth is no, not really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like to think that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But you say something that's really interesting, which is that women are born women, but men become men. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're not born men. Mm-hmm. We have to become a man. And so there's something that about having to earn that status.
Yeah.
And then the moment that it becomes a thing that you earn, it can also become a thing that you can lose.
Exactly.
Right. And so there's this anxiety about, first of all, achieving this thing, which is undefinable and vague and hard to understand anyway, and then recognizing that that thing can be taken away from you.
Yes.
And maybe that's where some of this anxiety comes from.
And
right?
It starts very early, right? And so that creates so much shame, right? And repression of if you show weakness, it's not that there's something wrong with society, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And you're to blame. And not only are you not supposed to feel that, you're not supposed to talk about it. And so a lot of men, and you know, I talk a lot about male shame in the book, and the most amount of comments I've received and, like, you know, messages and, you know, men particularly sharing with me is this has been able to put a language on something I've never been able to understand, or no therapist has been able to even help me understand that there's this shame spiral. Yeah. That not only, yeah, makes you feel like, well, then you're not a man. Then if you're not a man, then you're not worthy of connection. You're not worthy, yeah, of belonging. You're not worthy of being, you know, in a partnership. And so it creates this cycle of isolation. And actually what the research finds is that when men experience this shame, and women experience shame too, right? Of course. But when men tend to experience this shame, they either do two things. One is isolate, so further withdrawing. Mm-hmm. And the other one is masculinity restoring right. activities, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Lashing
prove,
out.
Exact, mm-hmm. proving it, right?
Prove it.
Mm-hmm. You took it away from me, I'm going to prove it. And if we live in a society where the way to prove that you're really masculine is to grab women by the pussy, mm-hmm. is to have a lot of guns, is to be dominant, talk over other people, be violent, be aggressive, of course we end up with a mass shooting in every day in this country. Of course, we end up with rising suicide rates that are, you know, in a state like Wyoming, for example, where the rate of suicide is the highest in all of this country. 80% of people who are dying from suicide are men. And so when you're not able, right, to restore your masculinity and you're going into isolation as a way to protect yourself, you are either hurting yourself or you're hurting other people. Mm-hmm. And I don't think either of those are productive, and neither of those are useful ways for men to actually cope with the struggle and the pain that they're feeling.
Hey, milkshakers, Rain Wilson here, and listen. I need to have meditation as a part of my life, or I go kind of loco in la cabeza. I also have to work out. I play a lot of tennis. Hydration has to be a priority. So one stick of this liquid IV that I've been trying recently, in 16 ounces of water, it hydrates us faster and more efficiently than water alone.
Oh, come on. Why do we need to put flavor in water? But whatever, I'm going to try it out. It is no exaggeration to say that I am obsessed with liquid IV. I drink like 5 of these a day. I actually have a bowl in my kitchen full of all the different flavors. There's like strawberry and there's guava. There's a lemon lime one that I really like. Passion fruit, that's my wife's favorite.
So here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna grab your liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code word milkshake at checkout.
That's 25% off anything you order when you get better hydration today using promo code milkshake. All you got to do is go to liquidiv.com, put the code in milkshake, 25% off. I'm telling you, man, I feel a million times better now that I'm actually hydrated instead of basically substituting coffee for water, which is what I normally do.
Healthy snacks have a very bad reputation for a good reason. Most of them don't taste very good, and they don't fill you up, and they don't satisfy your cravings. This particular episode of Metaphysical Milkshake is sponsored by Monk Pack, who makes snacks that taste like great tasting sugary treats, but with 1 gram of sugar or less.
They're only 150 calories, and they're great for anyone who's following the keto lifestyle. And they're also the perfect snack for anyone who's just trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. I've got right here on my desk right now the coconut cocoa chip. Man, this is, I mean, I like a lot of these flavors, but the coconut cocoa chip, I can't say enough about. I'm going to open this up right now. I'm going to eat it while Rain talks.
They've got that perfect balance of sweet and salty, and they've got a crunch from whole nuts and seeds, but they still manage to be soft and chewy. You just try them. Trust me, you're going to love them. They come in delicious flavors like sea salt, dark chocolate, caramel, sea salt, and my very favorite, peanut butter, dark chocolate.
Try it for yourself. You'll see. We have a special deal for our listeners. You get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product, all you got to do is visit monkpack.com and enter our code milkshake at checkout. And I just want to say, yes, it's gross that I'm talking with my mouth full, but what am I going to do? I love my Monk Pack.
Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it's backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. So to get started, go to monkpack.com. That's M-U-N-K-P-A-C-K.com. Select any product, then enter the code milkshake at checkout to save what? 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious food you can count on. And we thank you, Monk Pack, for sponsoring the podcast.
I want to talk a little bit more deeply about ideas of manhood, where they come from, the roots of manhood, how we even understand it. The ancient Greeks had this idea called andreia, which is essentially the Greek term for maleness. It's where we get the very concept for us. And for them, it had a very clear definition. It meant brawn. It meant audacity. But what was really remarkable about this idea is that it wasn't tied to a gender, in other words. It was a term that could apply to men or women. I mean, some incredibly heroic, mythical female characters in Greek stories and Greek mythology were described as having andreia, this notion of brawn, this notion of audacity in battle. But we get our concept of virility not from the Greeks, but from the Romans. Virility for the Romans, which comes from this Roman term virilitas, was all about self-control. Self-control, moderation, right? That reigning in your power. That's what virility meant. And I guess what I find fascinating about this whole thing is that these are separate things, that maleness and virility are different things. Virility also could be as applied to men and to women. And yet, I think what's happened in Western society is that this Greco-Roman idea of andreia, maleness, and virilitas, virility, became sort of married together, right? And it became this idea that we now refer to as masculinity,
right.
An idea that women are no longer allowed to take any part in, right? We don't refer to women as, masculine. We don't refer to, certainly not in a complimentary way.
Yeah.
We don't refer to women as virile. I mean, that's just a word we don't use for women, even though, again, the word, the concept is not gendered.
Right.
I'm just curious kind of in your research on this and in your academic work, how much of the way that we understand maleness has to do with the kind of historic ways in which it's been described and presented to us?
I think that where, to me, as a person who's been, you know, researching and reporting on this, I've just seen so much comfort and encouragement for girls showing masculine energy. And right. And so we're saying to girls, we think it's really bad.
You can be a tomboy.
You can be a tomboy. You can, girls who code and girls who become engineers, we're giving her a science kit instead of a Barbie doll. And that's badass. Right. And so a lot of the last, I think, 5 or 10 years of feminism, particularly, but especially the last 5 years, where there's been a focus on feminism in career and in the workplace, it's been this idea of be more assertive. Take command of a situation. Don't apologize, right? These are masculine, traditionally masculine, right, ideas. And obviously not all women have the latitude to do that. If you're a Black woman in the workplace, you do not have the same latitude as a white woman in the workplace. But there's an encouragement and a celebration of that, right? So there's a celebration of a girl playing with a monster truck, but there's no celebration of a boy playing with a doll.
Right.
And there's actually a lot of fear around that. And there's, I document it in the book. It's in places like New York with people who define themselves as progressives and feminists. I, you know, talk about this man I was talking to who was saying, I love, you know, my sister, my daughter, I brought her to this, you know, dance and it's all about feminism and I'm super excited about female empowerment. But then, you know, my son was holding a bouquet of flowers and I told him, like, give it to your sister. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that this is about shaming parents. I don't think that this is parents trying to hurt their boys. They're trying to protect their boys. But the problem is not the flowers, right? The problem is not the nail polish. The problem is not the dolls. Giving something that cries to a boy rather than something that kills, right? Why are we more comfortable with a boy holding a toy gun than a doll? This is the system that's hurting them. And parents are just trying to protect their kids.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm really interested in is that system. I think you're right. A lot of it has to do with protection. Yeah. A lot of it has to do with the fact that fathers want their sons to be in their image. Mm-hmm. And this is what they were taught, about what it means to be men. And so that's how they think it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So it's about the way in which we learn, for sure. It's about culture. There's no question about that. Something internal is I think getting us in this kind of feedback loop, but it becomes extraordinarily difficult if you can't sort of trace with confidence where this definition comes from to disrupt that definition.
Right. So much of this is coming from misogyny, right? Internalized misogyny, where the only reason why it's not cool for a guy to be a nurse, but it's cool for a woman to be an engineer is because we devalue what women are and what women do. And we devalue that work. I talk in the book, I mean, there only 10% of teachers are male. And a lot of people will think, well, women are just more inclined to go into that profession. Women are more nurturing. They have more patience. They raise children. So, of course, they're more likely to go into education. But then you realize that education at its inception was a male profession. The only reason why we have all women and we had women become teachers was because the government realized that they could pay them less.
Right.
And so then they started creating stereotypes around men being drunks, men being pedophiles, men, you know, you can't really trust them. So it became, you know, basically an essentially female profession. And I don't think that that's helping us, right? I don't think that, and it's hurting us in you know, gender is just one, obviously, prism. And then you add all the other things. This is a conversation that needs to be intersectional. Black boys, I mean, 2 or 3% of teachers are black men. And for a black boy to have one male black teacher over the course of, it could be in second grade and then they never see a black a teacher again, it makes them 38% less likely to drop out of school in college, right? So this is, there's so much potential, I think, male potential that's being lost. So many men who would want to be teachers, who want to be caretakers, who want to be social workers, who are interested in all of these professions, who are getting the message in a million different kinds of ways that this is not for them. And that starts again. I mean, I asked one of my most heartbreaking questions I asked men was, what was a toy that you were told you weren't allowed to play with as a boy? Which is a toy that you wanted to play with, right? And that just is such I think toys and playing and thinking about yourself as a child is really who you are, right? And there's something about being able to connect with that inner child that we really don't do. And so many men just, remembered exactly. Wow. They had vivid memories of, obviously, Easy Bake Ovens. So many Easy Bake Ovens were denied. One man recalled overhearing his parents arguing over the fact that he wanted kitchen tools for Christmas and hearing that again, that shame, right? There's something wrong with me. There's not something wrong. When you're a kid, you don't understand. You internalize everything, right? And one man also recalled like a little shopping cart. He just loved this little shopping cart. And he came back one night and his dad and all his friends had destroyed it. Ugh. And it's these like acts of humiliation and these acts of restoring, right? This is who you are. This is, you can't be this.
So I thought that instead of keeping this in the more sort of theoretical conversation about what it means to be a man and how to raise young boys into men, I would just ask my young boy.
I love this.
So
I'm seeing a third mic here.
One of my many sons, one of my many, many children. Hey, Cyrus. Hi.
Hi.
Would you mind joining us for a little bit? So can you start by telling us your name?
I'm Cyrus David Aslin, and I am in Second grade, I think.
So the first question that I have for you is, you have a lot of friends who are boys and a lot of friends who are girls. What do you think, what would you say is the difference between boys and girls?
Is it okay if I say something kind of inappropriate?
Yes, you can say anything you'd like.
Okay, great. It is inappropriate. So anyway, girls have vaginas and boys don't, and boys have penises and girls don't.
However, didn't you have a friend who in preschool started out as a boy and then chose to be a girl? Do you remember?
Well, technically not chose.
Tell us about that.
Well, there was this boy named Simon in preschool. He thought he was a girl, so he changed his name to Grace, and then he tried to change his name to Batgirl, but that did not work.
People did not start calling her Batgirl, but they did call her Grace.
Yeah, and I forgot a couple times and called her Simon.
Yeah, but that's really interesting. So, okay, so sometimes girls have vaginas and boys have penises. That's good. But that can't be all, because then Simon became Grace but still had a penis. Do you think there's anything else that separates girls from boys? What would you think? How would you describe the differences between boys and girls?
Girls usually like to have long hair.
Oh. Do you know boys with long hair?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay.
Like myself.
Well, then that can't be it. What else? What else do you think?
I have no idea.
Yeah, neither do I. That's exactly, that's what Liz and I are sitting here trying to figure this out. We needed your help. Are there things in your mind, so just your opinion, are there things that you think are only for girls and things that are only for boys?
No.
No? You don't feel that way?
No.
Yeah? Do you think other your friends think that way?
Some of them, and for some reason they're surprised that I like pink a lot.
Yeah. Mm. Your favorite color for most of your life until quite recently was what?
Purple, pink, mm-hmm. And it's still purple, pink, and blue.
Mm-hmm.
Especially blue, because I like blue jelly beans. I like the color blue. Mm-hmm. I like basically a lot of things blue.
So has anyone ever told you boys don't do that when you've tried to do something?
Well, maybe once or twice, but not technically.
And what were you doing?
I don't remember anymore.
You don't remember.
Sometimes I've noticed that some of your friends, like at school, when they play games, they play kind of violent games, don't they?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what kinds of games do they play?
Oh, I'm basically the only one in the school who never, ever plays violent games. Wow. Jeffrey, who's now in my class this year, last year, used to play a game actually about snipers.
Ugh.
And guns. And it goes like this. You unlock treasure chests, and there are snipers and guns in them.
How come you don't like those kinds of games, honey?
Because they're mean.
Yeah. Do you think that those are games that mostly boys play, or do girls play them too?
Pretty much mostly boys.
How come, you think?
I don't know how to explain it.
And what would you say to a boy who feels like he can't do certain things because he was told that boys don't do that? What would you, because you don't listen to those. What advice would you give him?
I would give him advice like, don't listen to whoever that guy is who's being mean to you.
Mm-hmm. And what if he says, well, it hurts my feelings. I feel like I should just do what he says.
You help him out?
Oh, that's interesting. So help out the person who's being mean. Maybe there's something wrong with them.
Help out both people.
Yeah, that's very true, right? Because both people who are hurting need some help.
Thank you.
Folks, listen up. Like many of you, I avoided going to the doctor during the pandemic. I really did. I skipped my yearly physical. I skipped my dental cleaning. But now everything is opening up and it's time to catch up on regular healthcare. So just download the free ZocDoc app, the easiest way to find a great doctor and instantly book an appointment.
You can search for local doctors who take your insurance. You can read verified patient reviews, book an appointment, do an in-person or video chat. Whether you need a primary care physician, a dentist, a dermatologist, a psychiatrist, eye doctor, any specialist, ZocDoc has you covered. So go to ZocDoc.com. Jesus Christ, try saying that three times fast. Go to ZocDoc.com.
ZocDoc makes healthcare easy. Now is the perfect time to prioritize your health. So go to ZocDoc.com/milkshake, download the ZocDoc app, sign up for free, and book a top-rated doctor. Many are available as soon as today. That's ZocDoc.com/milkshake. ZocDoc, ZocDoc, yeah, ZocDoc.
Folks, no matter how you're feeling about getting back out there, there's no denying that it's going to be an adjustment. When the world gets too loud, something that I love to do is create my own soundtrack by popping in my Raycon wireless earbuds.
As soon as I go running, I stick in my Raycons. If I'm walking the dogs, it allows me to listen to my playlist, to my podcasts, and it helps ground, center, and focus my day.
Sometimes when I'm like focusing on writing and I just need to zone out, I pop in these Raycons. The world around me just goes away and it's just me, my music, and my work.
Raycons are the best way to listen. They come with a bunch of gel tips for your comfort. And unlike some other brands, they don't stick out of your ears. I'm not going to name names. Raycons have a 32-hour battery life. So you can listen to what you want, when you want, for a really, really super long time. And they start at half the price of other premium audio brands, but they sound just as good.
Raycons come with a 45-day happiness guarantee, so you really can't lose. Give them a try. You'll see exactly what I mean. You can create your own soundtrack with Raycon right now. Metaphysical Milkshake listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/milkshake.
That's buyraycon.com/milkshake to save 15% on Raycons. buyraycon.com/milkshake.
I think Cyrus indicates a really interesting trend, which is that our ideas of masculinity and our expectations of men and malehood are shifting pretty rapidly when it comes to generations. So only 22% of men under the age of 30 say that they have a positive view or a very positive view of masculinity. 29% between the ages of 30 and 44. Mm. But then once you start getting a little bit older, right? Once you start getting to 45 to 64, it's 41% of men. At 65 and older, it's 48% of men. So it does seem like men are increasingly ambivalent about masculinity and everything that comes with it. So do you have hope? Do you feel like, you know, things are changing when you look into the future? I mean, minus, again, the pussy grabber in chief. But when you look into the future, do you think... Do you see a time in which these ideas of masculinity that are so, I know you don't like the term toxic, but so destructive to society will eventually fade away?
I'm interested in a conversation where we talk about, where men are safe to talk about whether they're enjoying the system we're in right now and where we could celebrate masculinity and we could celebrate boys and men. But, you know, choose which ones we're celebrating and which ones we're glamorizing and give them more options so that young boys aren't growing up saying, I don't want to be a man. That makes me sad. I mean, that you know, that's not the point of feminism, right? The point of feminism is, you know, we're seeing the future is female. We're seeing literally entire aisles at the bookstore of books that are meant to empower young girls and give them more a multitude of things and roles that they can be in the world. There's no, where's that aisle for boys? And where's that latitude and that potential and us uplifting, supporting, and protecting boys. A lot of these conversations can be counterproductive if we leave out half of us out of these conversations.
Okay, lightning round.
Yeah.
When do you feel most connected with the universe?
I want to say I feel most connected to the universe when my actions are aligned with my soul.
That's good. That's good. What is one thing that you hate?
I hate hate. I really do. It's the only thing I let myself hate.
What's one thing you know for sure?
I mean, I want to say the one thing I know for sure is that I don't know anything for sure.
What gender is your soul?
It's just purple. I don't know what gender that is.
And then finally, what is your life's big question?
I think a lot about why am I here?
Why am I here? That's a big one. Liz Plank, we love you. Thank you so much.
Dang.
For the love of men. Awesome book. You're an awesome person.
I love you.
Thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you for being so sweet to my boy.
Can I become your baby? Do you need a nanny? Because I just want to eat him up.
He's pretty delicious.
Lovely, lovely, lovely soul.
Wow, what a great interview. That was so amazing to hear. And your son is A, brilliant, B, adorable.
I know, vagina. I mean, how cute is that?
What was that like hearing your son engaging in this conversation?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I left that recording studio and it was great because Liz was so... She was just so praising of the way that I had, you know, raised Cyrus. And I don't know, there was something about having an objective person, and particularly a woman, and particularly somebody who's, you know, studying masculinity, basically look at me and say, you know what? You're doing a pretty good job. It made me feel so good because it is a struggle, as we've talked about. It is a struggle. I mean, there are moments where Cyrus shows vulnerability and I have to keep myself from saying, don't be such a baby. Don't, you know, why are you reacting that way? You're overreacting, you know, you're being too emotional, which is all the things that I was told, right? Mm. Which resulted in this, you know,
shaming,
this garbage human that I am now. And I feel like I felt like, wow, maybe I'm doing an okay job. And what does it mean? I think truly what it means in the end is this notion that as a dad, what I'm meant to do is allow my son to just simply be the fullest version of himself, to not try to make him be something else other than he is, because he is just naturally vulnerable and emotional, and I guess my job is to just simply not stifle that. You know, that's the best thing I could do as a dad to a son.
And who knows what the vision of what masculine or the male role is going to be 20, 30 years from now. That'll be really interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah.
It's changed so much from now from what it was in the 1950s.
I don't know. Something to think about. Okay, Metaphysical Milkshake fans, it's time for your favorite segment of the show and ours when we get to listen to listener voicemails.
Yay!
Listen, a lot of you guys have a lot of questions yourselves and you got a lot of answers to the questions that we ask. It's very easy to join us on the podcast. You could go to our SpeakPipe, speakpipe.com/metaphysicalmilkshake. Leave us a voicemail based on one of the questions that we're asking. Or if you want to actually come on the show, like be with me and Rain, it's so easy. All you got to do is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts telling us what your life's big question is or answering one of our big questions. Take a screenshot of it. Tag us on Instagram at Metaphysical Milkshake. And the next thing you know, you're chilling with me and Rain.
Yo.
Easy.
Yo, that's all it takes. And for this episode with Liz Plank, you know, what does it mean to be a man? You know, the idea of masculinity in the modern world. We've got a few callers in, and we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to hear from them.
The first call is from Doug. Let's hear what Doug has got to say.
Okay, what does it mean to be a man wanting to change the climate to make sure that the kids are all right? I am a man. My pronouns are he and him. And I believe very fervently that we need to, as men, abandon the field of leadership to women. Women seem to be doing a better job all over the world in leading on climate and the changes we need to make as a society to make sure that the kids are all right. Specifically, I think we need to look to Indigenous women and Black women in leadership positions to help get us through the crisis that white males created. And I'm very attracted to the notion of seven generations, which is an Indigenous concept of thinking about every decision from the standpoint of how is this going to impact our children seven generations from now, if we can even think that far ahead. If we could do that, we would save the climate and things would be great for our kids.
Yeah, let the women rule. Fun fact here, there are only 22 countries in the world where women serve as heads of state. Did you know that there are 119 countries who have never had, including us in the United States, who have never had a female head of state? And yet, just look at the last 2 years. Let's look at COVID, right? Female-led countries.
Yeah, New Zealand.
Like New Zealand, but other female-led countries as well, overwhelmingly had fewer deaths per population and handled COVID better than male-led countries. So, you know, Doug's not just fucking around here. He's absolutely right. We need to have more women in leadership roles. We need to give the reins of leadership to women. And you know, otherwise, we're all screwing ourselves.
I'm glad he brought up, women of color taking the reins, because I will say that, you know, women have been doing a pretty fantastic job around the world, but not in the United States. Not Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. These women are more crazy and more right wing than any guy possibly could be. It's like, come on.
But isn't that a step in feminism, that the women are just as fascistic as the men? Right?
Hey, women, we can be fascists too. Yeah, you know, I hate getting partisan, but it really is true. And I don't know why men get defensive around this all the time. You bring this up and so many men just get so riled up and hot around the collar. Like, you're demeaning me. You're degrading me as a man. Like, how dare you? And just so prickly and defensive. And it's like, guys, it's okay. We tried. White men tried. We gave it a good shot last 4,000 years. And time to just move on, yeah. Pass the baton. No big deal.
Take a break.
You could still play. You could still golf.
Put your feet
you
up.
Could silly. You could put your feet up, eat some fried chicken, enjoy the game.
All right, we got one more caller here. Another man. This is great. I want to hear from men.
Yes.
About what it means to be a man. This is Tim. What do you got to say, Tim?
My name's Tim. I'm a Protestant Christian. I live in Nashville. So because I'm a Protestant Christian, that means I look at everything through a biblical lens, because I believe in biblical infallibility and inerrancy and things like that. But anyways, trying to be fast. Okay. When I was 25, I'm 31 now, was the first time I was really exposed to the idea of what it meant to be a man. And a former pastor of mine was hosting something called a Great Man Event, which was four nights, four Tuesday nights here in Nashville, where we talk about what it means to be a man, what God has called us to do as men, the things that he expects of us. And those things were really, at a simplified perspective, a man does manly things is the word he used, which is providing, protecting, and leading his family. Man tends his flock, which means, he's responsible and disciplined and takes care of the things that he needs to do. And there's a couple others, but, that was a really changing point in my life. And, it was really significant to me, and I would love to talk about it more and be a part of your podcast. I love theology and talking about that and religion, and I've really enjoyed your show, and it would be great to hear from you.
Tim, that was very well said. And I know Reza is going to have a lot to say because it has to do with the Bible, which is one of your areas of expertise. I want to jump in. Thank you for that very sensitive and thoughtful question posed through a Christian lens, but really accessible to everyone, believer and non-believer alike. I appreciated that very much. I think that the only thing that I would say is, I say, Tim, I say amen to you. Provider and protector and leader of the flock. I think we see Reza doing that with his 87 kids.
It is a flock.
You know, when you think about providing and protecting your flock, I think this can often be misconstrued and redefined as, you know, men are in charge, men rule, what the man says goes, protecting can be militant, as opposed to, can we nurture our flock and support and lift up? And, you know, essentially, if instead of viewing Jesus as this kind of God man, son of God floating on a cloud, if we look at Jesus as someone whose actions can be emulated, then we as men can emulate Jesus with our families. I'm not saying we wash their feet necessarily, but caretake in a loving manner that might be missing from today's view on masculinity.
Wow, that was beautifully said.
Thank you.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, look, this is a widespread phenomenon, right? Not just in America, not just among, you know, Protestants. This idea that our concept of malehood comes from the Bible, which can be a little bit problematic, as the caller himself kind of admitted a little bit. You know, the Bible says that the man is to the family like Jesus is to the church. And it's a beautiful idea, and it's supposed to make you think, oh, well, then the job of the man is to be humble and self-sacrificing and compassionate and merciful, because those are the things that Jesus was. But oftentimes what it becomes is, oh, that means the man is God. The man plays the role of Messiah in the family. That kind of mentality, I think, is prevalent amongst Christian households, you know, not just in the U.S., but across the world. And, you know, like you said it just right, is that can be extremely problematic. And also, let's not forget that when the Bible says that, you know, we should follow God's design for true masculinity. Okay, but that was the design of masculinity 3,000 years ago. Like, the world is a little bit different now, and yet we still see it, right? That the man is supposed to provide, that the man is supposed to protect. Well, I mean, my wife provides just fine, and she protects pretty well, you know? And it doesn't make me less of a man to be like, yeah, it's cool, my wife takes care of me. That's not a big deal. And it also doesn't make me less of a man that I do all the cooking and cleaning in our household, because my wife sucks at both. In fact, literally, this woman burned water 2 separate times. Like, she didn't burn water once, Rain. She burned water
twice. Jesus burned water, right?
Jesus, I think he turned water into wine. If my wife
turned water into wine. I think you're right, too, in reframing the man's role as protector, provider, because 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, yes, we had to put, you know, women were bearing children and raising and nurturing the children and cooking in the cave, and men were out with the hunt and had the spears and the stronger upper body strength. So that's all well and good, but it's 2021 and we're all watching Netflix. So what does that mean now?
Yeah.
But great question, Tim. And I loved how you phrased it. And I, unlike Reza, would love to see people from both sides of the political spectrum and religious spectrums commenting and consulting on these life's biggest possible questions. And you know I'm teasing, Reza, because I know you want the same thing.
You can find us on social at Reza Aslan and at Rain Wilson, hashtag metaphysical.
The show is on Twitter at Metamilk Podcast. It's on Instagram at Metaphysical Milkshake.
And you can include Liz in the convo. She can be found at Feministabulous. So that's feminist, and then add an A-B-U-L-O-U-S. Feministabulous at Feministabulous. And pick up her book, For the Love of Men, while you're at it. Buy it. Do it. Tell your friends to buy it. Tell them right now. Oh, was I being toxically male in that? I was being really like
buy
alpha
it.
All of a sudden. Maybe that's the Dwight Schrute in me. I don't know. Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rain Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It is produced by Safa Samazadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick DeMaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. It is edited by Tyler Newbold. It was additionally executive produced by Golriz Lucina and Dariush Brizuela Nothaft. It was produced by Amy S. Choi and Rebecca Lehrer of the Mashup Americans. Associate producers are Jocelyn Gonzalez, Lindsay Cradowill, Sarah Pellegrini, Mary Phillips Sandy, and Shelby Sandlin.
What do boys do?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's different from girls.
Yeah, what do boys do that's different from girls?
They pee with their penis?
Yeah, all right.
That's it.
I think we got the penis thing down. I think that's pretty much...
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.